And tonight, our speaker is Roger Y. from Martinez, California.
My name is Roger, I'm an alcoholic. My sobriety birthday is April 13th, 1991. And my home group is nursery group number 3, and it meets on Wednesday nights in Walnut Creek, California. I just want to thank the host committee. I think the only people I know on the host committee is, I think, Dave and Chris and Ann. I don't know if that's really the host committee, if there is one. But I'd like to thank them anyways for picking me up at the airport and taking me out to dinner and showing me around a little bit. And just I'd like to thank the people that talked to me out front. They just made me feel a little bit at ease when they talked me out front. You know, that usually helps. And those people that are in their first 30 days or even your first year, I mean, welcome. When I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, it was strange. Back then, you know, in California, you could smoke in meetings, and there weren't that many young people at that time. There were, but they were just scattered around. And I thought immediately when I went in the, when I was in the room, I thought, I'm not like these people. I wasn't married 5 times. I don't have kids from a bunch of different marriages. I didn't have my house. I didn't lose my house because I didn't own one. I didn't get fired from jobs because I didn't really have any long enough. I would quit before I'd get fired. I didn't fly planes under radar through Mexico to drug running or anything. You know, some of those stories that you hear, or I wasn't in a biker gang. I don't ride a motorcycle. I don't ride a Harley. So I didn't, you know, I never had any involvement with, you know, the Hell's Angels or anything. So I thought, I'm not like these people. Because where I was at, you know, the stories, and not that that's bad. It was just one particular meeting. But in that meeting, I kind of thought AA was like that all over the place. And these days, I know it's quite different than that. It's pretty inclusive, and everybody is in Alcoholics Anonymous. And that's one of the beauties of Alcoholics Anonymous. That's one reason why I fell in love with Alcoholics Anonymous. But just to share my experience, strength, and hope. I don't know about the disease part of it as far as the genetic part of that or anything like that. But I know that I never really felt comfortable growing up. And as I said, and I pointed out the first meeting that I went to, I didn't relate to any of those people. But today, the reason why I relate is because once I put alcohol in my body, something happens. Something happens. There's like a hunger there that can never be satisfied. And I don't know where I'm going to wind up, what I'm going to say, what I'm going to do. I don't know what's going to happen. And after over a period of time, it didn't matter. It just didn't matter. And so, you know, like I said, I never really liked how I felt when I, you know, growing up. I was just always uncomfortable. I was that kind of kid where if we would go into a retail store with my mom, she would turn around for a second and I would be gone. I'd be running around the clothing racks, pulling off the price tags off of things and knocking over things in the shelves. I'd go and collect things and put them in her purse. So I was already stealing at a pretty young age. As soon as I could walk and reach things, I was already stealing. And just, she would just carry it out for me. I just felt, you know, I don't know, just felt like doing it. Just felt like the right thing to do. And as time went on, once I found alcohol, some people say it was like, as soon as they had it, it was it. It was magic. I'd say the first time I tried it, I was 10 years old. I didn't try it again until I was, you know, maybe 13. But that time when I tried, well, 3 years later, I mean, it's not that much longer, but I blacked out. And at the time, I didn't really know what that was. I just thought it was because we mixed a bunch of different alcohols together, met at my house at 7 a.m. before school, and kids showed up with mayonnaise jars, Scooby-Doo thermoses, and we just sat on the air conditioning unit in the side of my parents' house and just drank. I rode on the handlebars of someone's bike to school. I barely remember that, and I don't remember much else. Except that night I woke up probably about 8 o'clock in the evening, and it was just, I didn't know what happened. You know, the next day the kids had to piece it together. And there's large parts that I still don't know. Now, the first thing I thought of, I didn't think, I shouldn't have done that. I got in trouble. I got sick. It scared me. None of that crossed my mind ever. The first thing that crossed my mind, shouldn't have mixed all those alcohols together. You know? And so I just, from then on, I just started sticking. If I start out with tequila, that's what you start out with. You start out with beer, you end with beer. And that's what I would do. And you know, and I would say as time went on, you know, it you know, really wasn't a problem. And then I thought I was just drinking to have fun, and that's what everybody else was doing. You know, but as the years went on, it slowly progressed, and I started to have consequences. And there's one story I get sick of telling back home because everybody's heard it, and it's kind of the story that I'm known for. But Ann and Dave haven't heard in a while, and you guys haven't heard in a while. My wife's heard it a bunch of times, and she's probably tired of it. I can't believe she would just come all up here with me to sit here and listen to me talk about myself for an hour. But you know, when I was 19, I got my first DUI. And not that having a DUI is the mark of an alcoholic, but I got one at 19. And so I was a minor. And so in California, at the time, they put the breathalyzer on your ignition system. So you had to blow into it continuously for, I don't know, like 15 seconds. And then you could start the car. It was hooked up to the ignition. So you'd have to blow into it every single time. And I was good for the first 6 months. I thought, that's fine. I'm not going to drive. I'm going to be good. I'd still drink, but I just wouldn't drive. And after a while, people got tired of me riding with them or behaving inappropriately. So I figured out that I just had to, and it got hard to coach people how to blow into it. You know, outside of a, you know, keg party in suburban town, to coach people to blow into it, it just was too difficult. So I started just leaving it running. And I would make sure it had gas in it, and I would have a separate key for the door so I could lock it so no one would steal it while it was running. And I would turn on the heater so it wouldn't overheat, and then just crack the window a little bit. Makes perfect sense, doesn't it? And I tell that story sometimes in meetings, and people go, "Why don't you use an air compressor? Why don't you blow up a bunch of balloons and keep them in your back seat?" And I just thought, no. I mean, I did know another guy that had one of those, and he had balloons that he would pre-blow up and leave them in the back of the car. And I just thought he was an idiot. And I'm like, no, I'm just leaving it running. You start it once, that's it. You don't have to carry, any balloons or anything, or a compressor, an air compressor. So, and I would leave that thing running all the time, everywhere, bars, and then, and there were some times where I would somehow kill the motor because it was a clutch. So I didn't really know what to do. And so the guy that would calibrate it was down in Monterey, and he goes, "Well, you know, if you push start it, it'll still work." So then I would, it depends where I went. If I went to a bar where there was like, I was on an incline, or if I was somewhere where there was a hill, I would just leave it so I'd get a running start, back it into someone's driveway and just gone, roll start it. But if that wasn't the case, then I'd just leave it running. You know, so this time I had options for my drinking. And in one particular case, it was a Tuesday night, and I woke up a friend of mine's brother, who I never really hung out with, to get him to go drink with me. And we went to some bar, by this time it was about drinking, and this bar is the type of bar, and I don't mean to offend anybody, but it was the kind of bar where you can drink, and you can probably cash your Social Security check there as well. And it was the kind of bar that I normally wouldn't frequent. So it wasn't about the atmosphere, it was about just getting drunk. And so we go there, and it was one of those kind of drunks where I couldn't really find the bathroom. I was just plowing through bar stools just to get to the bathroom. And I'm still a minor at this time, too, going to bars. And so finally I drop him off, and I'm driving home, and I get pulled over. And the car's running, and I see the car. I see him get out of his car, and he comes around. And he goes, "Do you know why I pulled you over?" And I go, I don't, officer. But this time I'm just trying to be nice. I've been pulled over so many times. You've got that routine figured out, what to say. I'm trying to be nice as you can. "Yes, officer. No, officer." That kind of thing. And he's like, "Well, the reason why I pulled you over is you have a taillight out." He's like, "It's no big deal. You just go get it fixed. You get it signed off, and then it's no big deal. You don't have to go to court." It's like, okay. So I think I'm going to get out of it. He's like, "Oh, you can go ahead and shut off the car. I'll be writing for a little while, so you can go ahead and shut the car off." So I shut the car off, and I'm thinking. So I got about like 4 or 5 minutes, however long it's taken to write everything down, to think about what to do. So I think, okay, well, how am I going to get into this? And so finally I go, be honest. Be honest. So I go, officer, you know, I have this thing in this car, and it's monitoring my drinking, and if I've had too much alcohol, then I can't start the car, and it's this and that. And he's like, oh, that's great. That's so responsible. I go, but I can't start it right now. He's like, does that mean you have too much to drink? I go, no, I've only had two in the last 4 hours, so my body should have metabolized it, and I should be fine. It's malfunctioning. So he goes, well, what can we do? Can we call anybody? I go, well, no, they're in Monterey. So, you know, I think if we push started, that might work. And he was he was just the nicest police officer there ever was. I mean, he goes, okay. So I open up the door and I go to help him push start. He goes, oh, no, no, go ahead, get in, I'll push. So I get in the car and I'm looking in my rear mirror and I see the top of his upper half of his body and his crew cut. And he's like, okay, we start going, and he's at an angle, a 45-degree angle, and I can hear his keys and his billy club flapping and his boots hitting the pavement. And I'm looking in the rearview mirror, and I'm just amazed that I'm drunk. I mean, just, and this Pleasanton police officer is pushing me home. You know, and by the county of Alameda, put this breathalyzer in my car to manage my drinking, and here I am on a Tuesday night having a police officer push start me home. And then I just was amazed, and he says, let the clutch out. We must have ran. And I'm just like, I was dumbfounded. I couldn't believe it was happening. So he pushed me for probably about 100 yards before I finally let the clutch out. And I waved, and he was doubled over, hanging on. He's like, going, yeah, no problem. I mean, it's amazing. I mean, I could laugh at that story when I look back on it, but, you know, it really was, I was going to any lengths to get drunk. You know, I would do anything to drink. You know, it didn't matter. The disease of alcoholism, you know, was, at this time, was you know, I was in the middle of it. It was happening. And the last person to realize it was me. And, you know, as I mentioned in the beginning, you know, what I know what makes me an alcoholic is once I put it in my body, something happens. I have that phenomenon of craving. And once I start with that mental obsession and I say, you know what, a drink would be pretty good right now. You know, and then I start drinking, then I don't know what's going to happen. You know, I know that that's what brings us here. But I know today that there's far more things that keep us here together. Because it doesn't take long to be around a little bit, to go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous and see the rotation of people come and go. Now, some people move out of the area. Some people just don't make it. They just, something happens to them. You know, they're in an accident or an illness happens. But a lot of people, you know, are out there drinking again. And so I always wonder when I sit in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, what's my responsibility here? You know, do I do enough for Alcoholics Anonymous? You know, I always wonder that. And one thing my sponsor always says to me, he's like, you want to know how to not go to a bad meeting ever? And I'm waiting for this pearl of wisdom to be dropped on me. And he goes, go to give. And at first I was like, go to give? I just didn't get that. And I know that when I go to a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, I make an effort to get out of myself and see how you're doing. Then at some point, I don't think about myself as much. And somewhere in that point when I don't think about myself as much, maybe a power greater than myself that I've found through doing the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, maybe in that time, maybe not right then, but maybe next week or next month, if I keep doing it, you know, that power greater than myself comes into my life where I start to rely upon a little more. I start to believe that it's going to be okay, you know, that it's going to work out, whatever it is, whatever I got going on in my life. And, when I first got here, you know, I mentioned the DUI and the other thing. And when I had another one, and then I had to go to this DUI class. And the woman in that class would walk up and down the aisle, and she would say, maybe you're not an alcoholic. Maybe you are. Maybe you aren't. Maybe you just got unlucky. Maybe the cop was having a bad night. And then she said, if you want to test yourself, go to the nearest bar and have two drinks and stop. I had never heard that before. You know, years later when I got to Alcoholics Anonymous, I find out that she didn't make that up. So I went and tried it, and I did it once, and I thought, see, I'm not an alcoholic. But then the next weekend, It was on, because by this time, there was times when I was picking when I can drink. I was starting to try and manage or control my drinking. And if you're an alcoholic like I am, it's worse. And the periods of when I wasn't drinking was just miserable and people couldn't stand to be around me. So these days I know that, yes, it is Alcoholics Anonymous, and yes, you know, we get here because of alcohol. But it's far more today what I have to do in order to just not drink. Physical sobriety is important, but I know that if I don't do certain things that are suggested of me, that Alcoholics Anonymous suggests of me, then really my sobriety isn't really valid. You know, if I don't go to meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, then, you know, big deal. You know, my parents, you know, to some degree still think I'm in a phase. You know, there's just some little hobby I'm doing right now, and he'll grow out of it. You know, and that's fine. They may never understand. You know, they still say things like, well, do you still go to those? It's been a long time since you drank. How come you still go? So they just may never get it, and that's okay. And I know that, you know, I need to be in Alcoholics Anonymous. I need to be around other alcoholics. You know, I've ran the gamut of other things. And if I mention something tonight that may slightly get inside you a little bit and maybe bother you somewhat, it's just been in my experience and something I've done in sobriety, which I consider to be a slight mistake. For example, I you know, was 3.5 years sober. I went away to a 4-year college. And I thought, you know, everything was going well, and I was in student government, and I had a paid internship, and I was in a relationship, and I stopped going to meetings. And I created it probably more wreckage in that time than I did when I was drinking. And it would last till the school year, and then summer would come, and I would go back home. My friends and they would go, what have you been doing? How's it going? They could tell that I was just rough around the edges. And so I'd get back into it and get active and start, you know, and you know, get the fire going again. And then I'd go right back to school and I would go, okay, I'm gonna get active, I'm gonna get a service commitment, get a sponsor up there, so on and so forth. I'd go for a little while, and for some reason I just find reasons not to go anymore because I was too busy. You know, I started to separate myself from the rest of you, is what I would do. And thank God I didn't pick up a drink in that time. But I tell you what, it was a pretty miserable time. There was a lot of sleepless nights. There was a lot of nights where I couldn't eat, or a lot of days where I couldn't eat anything. The people that I didn't really hang around with anybody. I would just somehow maybe take a hostage and demand that they hang out with me and just be ultra needy. And it was just miserable. And my perception of who I was and what I was doing was absolutely distorted. Distorted to the point where I would have never have imagined that. You know, 3.5 years away from a drink. And I'd gone through the steps and had a sponsor and taken other men through the steps. And, you know, but it can happen. You know, every day is a day I got to keep doing it. You know, I got to keep doing it. And I know that for me, that if I am unwilling to do the things that the rest of you do, you know, I'm in trouble. You know, most of you know that. You know, I'm just preaching to the choir. Most of you experienced that, and I'm not saying anything new, but you may not be. You may be hearing it for the first time. You know, and I know in Alcoholics Anonymous, the meetings that I was going to early on, it was a lot of drunkologues. You know, it was 40 minutes or a half hour of just drinking stories. And after a while, those drinking stories just were tiring. You know, these days, there's a whole lot more to sobriety than what I used to do. You know, there's a lot of things that happen in sobriety. And I can tell you the mistakes that I've made. You know, by no means am I perfect, but I've made a lot of mistakes in Alcoholics Anonymous. Made a lot of mistakes. But, you know, I didn't have to drink over them. And I find today that where I'm most comfortable is when I'm active in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, active in my home group, and I show up on time and I get there early so I can talk to people. Because I wondered why I never really felt a part of when I would just blast in the meeting, you know, 5 minutes just before it started or 5 minutes after, and then I never get a chance to talk to anybody and then leave and the whole entire meeting feel a little bit disconnected from the rest of you. I never knew that until the guys at my home group said, why don't you show up a half hour early? And I didn't want to, but then I started doing that. And that home group changed my life, and I started going there 5 and a half years sober. You know, that home group changed my life because it was, they were serious about it. They had fun, but they were serious about it. And, you know, it's where I met my third sponsor, the current sponsor that I have now. And I just watched what that man does. You know, I was telling some people at dinner, he's 20% of his lung capacity, but that guy, he is everywhere. He doesn't make excuses not for showing up. I mean, if he can't be somewhere, he will call, and he is truly, you know, in the early stages of, like, you know, pneumonia. And that's when he can't go to the meeting. But he goes. The guy goes all the time. And so I watch what he does. I follow his example. And it's people like that that have given me inspiration to keep doing it and the reason why I need to be here. And, you know, one thing is what Alcoholics Anonymous has done in my life and has changed my perspective of my family. And one story in particular, I was the kind of son where I went to Reno with my family. They own a timeshare up in Lake Tahoe. And we went up there one year and I brought a friend up, and it was more important for me to go to Nevada and get Everclear. I don't know if you're familiar with Everclear. It's basically like gasoline is what it is. If you leave the cap off of it, it evaporates. And so I told my parents I'd come back. We'll meet him in front of Caesars. And I didn't come back. You know, and it's in February. You know, my parents were, you know, waiting outside in the cold for 4 hours. And, you know, at the time it didn't make me cry about it. I didn't think anything was wrong, you know, because I needed to get loaded. And, you know, when I do those things over and over and over, you know, that was just a, you know, one particular incident. And my mom would never sleep until she heard the microwave with the garage door open. So when I get to the 9-step, you know, how do you make up for that? I'm sorry. And that just doesn't do it. You know, the big book of Alcoholics Anonymous tells us that remorseful mumbling just doesn't fit the bill. I mean, that may not be exactly, but it's basically, I'm sorry just doesn't do it. You need to do more than that. And, you know, so how do I do that? And, you know, it took a while. Because, you know, the family, they've heard so many promises. Oh, I won't do that again. If you give me a check to pay for this court, you know, this fee that you don't have to pay to the court, I won't do it again. You know, if you help me pay for the body work on the car, I won't do it again. I won't do it again. I won't do it again. You know, and time again, I do it over and over and over. So I expect a little bit of sobriety, and all this, and I expect my parents to trust me. You know, I know today they have to earn that. I have to earn it. I have to prove to them that it's different. And I can't demand it. In the beginning, I demanded it. You know, I demanded that they respect my sobriety. And you know, I'm sober. I haven't done this. And I wanted a pat on the back. But my family was, they were like, so what? Get a job. Do something. You know? I mean, they're really not impressed with anything I do. They really aren't. What they want from me is they want me to show up for Thanksgiving dinner on time. They want me to show up for Christmas and at least make an effort to buy gifts for people that are halfway thoughtful. You know, that's all they care about. You know, they just want me to be there. They just want me to be a son. So probably, you know, this is a period of before I met my wife. And when I was at this home group, you know, I'd hear what these guys would say. They would talk about all this. You have to live it. You have to prove it. You know, your actions speak louder than words, and you have to be an example of Alcoholics Anonymous. And so I would hear all these things, and I'd watch these guys do what they said they were going to do. And so I realized, well, you know, I just got to do something. And then at this point, you know, single, and I'm in AA, and I'm thinking every meeting I went to was kind of like a, you know, like a club. You know, you have to check it out first. You have to see who's there. And I only went to certain meetings for who was there. And I realized that, you know, I was just looking for something. And what I was going to do is I was never going to find it. Because I still had a lot of pieces missing in my life. There was a lot of things about myself that I needed to do differently. You know, my attitude and who I was and where I was going had to change. And so I started spending, the advice of my sponsor, I started spending more time with my family. Not separating AA, not hanging more time with my family. It was equal time. You know, meetings, work, family, and I would just, it was all equal. And I see that happen a lot, and I've done it, where you just pour all your time into the relationship, or pour all your time into work, pour all your time into whatever it is other than the meetings, just to somehow that might fix it. So I made an effort to try and balance all that out and just do all of them and try and do them the best of my ability and be a decent employee and be a decent son and a brother. And, you know, by this time my parents retired. You know, they retired from their jobs, and they were going to a lot of cruises and flying a lot of places, going to Europe. And one time my dad asked me, he's like, well, what are you doing on Wednesday? And I go, well, I don't have a meeting, but I go, what do you need? He's like, we need a ride home from the airport. And we went there. I went there. And you know, I thought I was going to be late, or I thought I was going to, you know, get their flight wrong and be there 2 hours too late like I always do. And I didn't see them, and they were already at the baggage claim. So I ran around, and I finally saw them at the baggage claim. And I saw my mom, and I said, oh, I thought I probably missed you guys. And they go, oh, no, my mom said, no, we knew you would be here. I mean, how does that happen? Is it for me just making some cheesy promise? You had to work for it. You know, so I mean, the relationship with my parents is just, you know, I have one. And it's something that I couldn't have in my first year, my second, my third, fourth, and so on and so forth. You know, I don't know when it's going to be, you know. For me to happen right about, you know, 8 years of sobriety. And, you know, we have a wonderful relationship today. And, you know, those things I have to work for. And in meetings of Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, I was the kind of guy in Alcoholics Anonymous where I was afraid to interact with people. I was basically a social retard. And I would say inappropriate things, and I do still do that from time to time. You know, I would corner somebody after the meeting and go, you know, what are you doing? What step are you on? You know, are you calling your sponsor? You know, if they weren't doing the four step like how I was taught to do the four step, then, you know, I would just hammer them and just tear them apart. And then I wondered why no one wanted to hang out with me. You know, so I still believe in the same things about Alcoholics Anonymous, and I still have a pretty structured, you know, AA life. But yet, how I package it is different. I can still believe in the same things, but how I say it and what I do and when I say it has to change. And that's one thing that's changed over time, you know. And you know, I sponsor a couple guys, and I know that I can't sponsor them all the same way. You know I have to make adjustments. You know, I got some guys that are really, really needy, and they call every day because they need to talk to somebody. And I got guys I don't hear for weeks. So I have to figure out ways to package that to each one. And it's still the same message. You know, I'm not watering it down. I'm telling it exactly my experience. But how it comes across has to change. Because there was a period of my sobriety where a lot of guys I were sponsoring would leave. Because I got to the relationship with them where I didn't know how to handle it anymore. Once we got to the end of the steps and the mechanical part was over, or not over, but the majority of that mechanical part was over, most of the step work, then I didn't know what else to do. So I did weird things to push them away. And these days, you know, it has to go beyond that. Not only did I take them through the steps and try and be an example to you know, sobriety or Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, those relationships have to also progress. You know, my relationship with my friends have to progress. The relationship with my family has to progress. The relationship with coworkers has to progress. Because if it doesn't, I'm standing still. And if I'm standing still, there's going to be that time where I think, you know what? I don't need to go to that meeting. I'm tired. I worked all day. You know, all of a sudden, a lot of family events start to come up. All of a sudden, I get busy. All of a sudden, that, you know, the program that gave me life starts to lose its luster. You know, I start to turn my back on Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, and I've done it before. And I know that I'm not incapable of doing it again. And so what do I do? As I make an effort to show up to my same four meetings a week, no matter what. And if I'm not going to be there, then I call some people and let them know I'm not going to be there. And so the next time I show up at that meeting, I don't have to be defensive. You know, if someone says, where were you last week? I get defensive. And how I hear it is, oh, you think I'm not going. You think I was probably drinking, huh? I get all paranoid. But if I take responsibility and I let the people around me know that, you know, where I'm at and what I'm doing, and I'm open with all my friends or the people in my home group, then I don't have to be defensive. And, you know, and that power has expelled the obsession to drink. You know, and the rest of it now is, well, how do I continue to live on a daily basis sober? And you hear a lot of times, you know, the principles. And I'm not going to mention any of what they are. I know that I just have to apply them in my life. And through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, I started to discover what those principles might be. And all of a sudden, the traditions on the wall, all of a sudden I looked up one day in a meeting and they made sense to me. I went, okay, that makes sense. And, you know, so I try and practice those wherever I go, at work, at home, with the family. And when I do that, what happens to me is I start to feel one among many. You know, and oftentimes in meetings you hear people will talk about their God, how that works in their lives. And I used to do the same thing. I used to think that I had the parking lot God that I call. You know, I would say, they go into a shopping center and there's no spaces. It's crowded. It's packed. And there's no parking. Oh, God, please, let me get a space. God, please, let me get a space. You know, God, please, I hope I get that job. Or God, please, I hope it works out. You know, that's the kind of God I had before. You know, I know today that my God doesn't work that way. You know, he's more interested in what I'm doing for others. And when I show up to Alcoholics Anonymous and I make an effort to be of service, to get out of myself, in that moment, I mentioned early on in the beginning, somewhere in there when I get out of self, I'm out of the way enough to where that power greater myself comes into my life. And when that God comes into my life, for me, the gauge is, you know, I often wonder, you know, is God working my life? Do I really have faith? Do I really trust God? Do I really believe that what these people in Alcoholics Anonymous are telling me is true? You know, do I need to keep doing this? I always wonder that. You know, what's the gauge? How do you know? You know, there's no, people mention a spiritual bank account. And the thing is like, well, yeah, a spiritual bank account, but how do you read that? If you have one, how do you know how much you have? And the only time you know when you don't have one is when you're, you know. You're just wrecked. You're out of options. So, I mean, I don't really like to think of it in those terms. For me, the gauge is when I show up to my home group early and I can look everybody in the eye and shake their hand and tell them exactly what's going on, whether it's good or bad. Just being able to just chit-chat outside of a meeting. You know, when I can do that, then I know that there's a power greater myself working in my life. Because 9 times out of 10, I want to come into the meeting and act like I got it going on. You know, it'll either be an ego thing, like, you know, I got, you know, don't even come talk to me, or, you know, it's this arrogant kind of thing, or I'm in the corner feeling sorry for myself because I want you to come up to me and ask me how I'm doing. You know, no matter what the case may be, I need to just get out of myself and go, how's it going? Or if I see somebody in my home group, friend, I've seen him there for a couple weeks and I don't even know his name, make an effort to go talk to him. You know, ask him where he lives. You know, does he work? I don't hammer if he's got a sponsor or this and that anymore. You know, I just go, where do you live? Get him to talk. Get an alcoholic, ask him a few questions to talk about themselves. Then, you know, then I don't have to do anything. You know, so when I can do that, that's the barometer for me. When I can feel comfortable in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. And I know for me, if I could feel comfortable in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, then I have a pretty good chance of feeling comfortable at work. Then I have a pretty good chance of feeling comfortable with my family. Then I got a pretty good chance of feeling comfortable out there in the world somewhere, like at a restaurant, or waiting in line at the airport, or just driving in traffic, or sitting in traffic. You know, then things are okay. You know, and so much has happened to me in Alcoholics Anonymous. And for those of you that have been where I've been, you know what I'm talking about, And for those you may not relate to it at all and haven't experienced what I've talked about, well, there's a whole lot more. You know, if you got a problem with alcohol, this is the place. And there's so much more. I was talking to, I forgot his name already. I was talking to a gentleman outside. He has a piercing in his nose. Tim. I was talking to Tim outside. And he was telling me, yeah, it's pretty good. I feel pretty good. And it's, you know, God, I'm amazed. He's like, I feel really good right now. And I go, it gets better. I go, it gets better more than you can ever, ever imagine. So don't even try and picture it, because you're going to be wrong, because it'll be better than what you could ever imagine. And I've heard that from the elder statesman in Alcoholics Anonymous, and every day I stay sober, and every month or every year I stay sober and continue to practice all these principles on my affairs, they're right. They're right. You know, so many things have happened to me, and I think the greatest thing is I haven't felt like picking up a drink. I haven't caused any wreckage in a long time. You know, I'm surrounded by people who care about me. I'm surrounded by people I care about. That I have a genuine care, I care what's going on in their life. I care about them. You know, and that before I never did that. You know, if I hear about somebody's family, a tragic thing, I'm sad for them. Or I'm happy for them. Before, I just didn't care. I just did not care. And that was a pretty empty, lonely life. And the delusion for me was that drinking was going to fix that. You know, another day, I was thinking again, I'm always reminded, but it was reminded one more time that when I was drinking, there was that first 5, 10, 15 minutes of, you know, yeah, this is it. Where I open up and I start talking to people and start, you know, telling some lies and getting people laughing and... You know, just being in the bar and that camaraderie that I thought I had. You know, I spent my whole drinking career trying to chase that. You know, that first 5 to 20 minutes. You know, I try to chase that. And what I get today is I get that feeling every day in Alcoholics Anonymous without drinking. But I have to do something for it. You know, and I know most of you do, and I'm not saying that because I know you're not doing it or you are or not. But I have to remind myself, and I have to say it. I have to do something. I have to work for my sobriety. Just like I talked about my amends to my parents. You know, I don't get that just by one little, I'm sorry. You know, I don't get the gifts of sobriety from being sober a month or a year. You know, what it's become is my experience. Does it make me better than anybody? No. You know, I'm somewhere in the middle. You know, I'm coming up on 13 years, and I know in my home group, that's smack dab in the middle. You know, there's a lot of guys there with, you know, 20, 30 years plus, and a lot of guys, you know, with less time than me, and I'm right in the middle, and I appreciate that. You know, the one thing that kind of makes me sad, and I know, I always ask that question, what happened to all those people that, I mean, there should be more people in Alcoholics Anonymous, you know, with 20, 40, 30 years. A lot of them die. One old timer's telling me that. He's like, well, first you got to stay alive to get that much time. And some of them just don't go out to night meetings anymore, but there should be a lot more. And he's like, well, you know, there is a large percentage. He's like, and I don't know. Sometimes they get busy. And sometimes it makes me sad, because I wish we had more examples of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm always looking for that. And I appreciate the old timers in my home group. I respect them. I don't clown them. I love who they are for what they are and what they're not. And even though some of them are a little goofy sometimes, you know, that's okay. Even though they share the same thing every time, it's okay. You know, I love them, you know. They're there every week. They're there every week, you know. These days I appreciate consistency. You know, I really do. Because if they weren't there sitting in their same seat, it wouldn't be the same. You know, so them just being there physically is a treat. You know, I absolutely love Alcoholics Anonymous. It's gave me everything I have. You know, I was the kind of guy that, I barely graduated from high school. You know, and not that it's a mark of sobriety or anything that, you know, I went back to school and graduated from college, you know, and I went and got my master's and finished that. You know, so I have a whole full life ahead of me. Does it mean, you know, I know you can, some of the guys I sponsor, they're back in school now and they go, well, I don't know if I can go to that many meetings anymore. I go, why? He's like, well, I got class this day and this day. And I go, I tell you what, you could be married and go to 4 meetings a week and commute 68 miles one way to go to graduate school. You can do it. You can still go to 4 meetings a week. Trust me, you can. And they watch me do it. And so they go, oh, yeah, I forgot. I can't bring up that school meeting. I'm busy thing to me. You know, so it's possible, but it's Alcoholics Anonymous. You know, I like to stay busy because I can't spend time at home, because then I'll get on the computer or I'll play too many video games or do something and just waste time and think about myself and feel sorry for myself. That's the worst thing I can do. You know, I like being out there in the world and participating. You know, it's nice to be a participating human being in society. And I think I've talked long enough. I think we're there. So I really appreciate you guys for having me and putting up with us. And I really want to thank Dave and Ann for letting my wife and I stay at their house and being gracious hosts. And I want to thank the rest of you. And happy birthday to the people that got chips tonight. Thank you.